I think, if I pushed all the correct buttons. Sonny Osborne, you're on the phone, bud.
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm good.
What's happening? What's happening?
Just doing my Saturday show, and your name came up as I was talking to Rhonda Vincent about. She's in Milan, I believe, Michigan tonight, and she's going to be up in my neck of the woods in Florence tomorrow and mentioned you, and I thought, well, I'm just going to tell you that we talked to you about it in case your ears were burning.
Played there in Milan many times.
Oh, yeah, it's probably a venue you've been to many times, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good place right there. A lot of good people up there.
What you texted me back as we were just kind of messing around on the phone is that today is I think it's a pretty important date, if this is actual the date. Tell them what you were telling me. Go ahead.
August the 8th of 1964, which was 51 years ago today, we were introduced as the newest members of the Grand Ole Opry. The Osborne brothers were introduced as the newest members of the Grand Ole Opry. Yeah, it was important.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? We've talked about that before, but if people haven't listened to it, that was a turning point in the career of the Osborne brothers. And really, if you have a minute, you can kind of go through that whole little story about how you and Bobby were up east, I think, and were trying to figure out how long you were going to keep doing this bluegrass thing.
Oh, we had already decided to give it up. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:30. No, closer to like 3 o'clock in the morning. And we just were going nowhere. I mean, just spiraling, like, down. And I just told him, I said, you know what, we might as well give it up because what we're doing is not working. And he said, I kind of agree with that. I believe that. And he lay there for a minute, and he said, you know what, last year, Doyle Wilburn gave me a business card, and he said if we ever wanted to make a change, to call him. And I said, have you got that card? And he said, yeah, I've got it in my billfold. And I said, let me have it. And he gave it to me, and I called Doyle right then. And, of course, it was really late. And he called me a few choice names. As soon as I told him who it was, he called me a few expletives, and he said, do you know what time it is? I said, yep. You said if we ever wanted to change, to call you. And I said, we want to change.
Now's the time.
And he said, couldn't you wait until tomorrow? And I said, no, we need to get something going right now. And he said, all right. That was be on a Saturday, I think it was, it was a Saturday, and we had played a club in Pennsylvania, and you know, we were just not doing well at all.
And Sonny, when you say that, this was after Ruby and after some other things that got in some airplay,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Ruby. I mean, this was I can't remember the exact date, but this would be in 1963, and Ruby came out in 1966. We had a number 11 chart record in 57 with Once More, and you know, our career should have been really doing well, but it wasn't, and it was. I don't know why. I just don't know why, but. I called Doyle and I told him, and he said, well, I'll call you back Monday. And so by Monday, he had us set up to do the Opry that next weekend, which was a Friday and Saturday night, as guests. And then he had us set to do, I think it was U.S. Army show tape Sunday before we came back to Dayton to our home. And we just told him, we said, we've got to have the Grand Ole Opry, and that's all there is to it, because if without that, we can't survive. And we couldn't.
That's amazing.
Period, at that time. And he said, I'll tell you what you do. You sign with our agency, and our booking agency and the publishing company and all that stuff, and give me 18 months, and if I can't get you in the Opry, you can do anything else you want to then. And I told Bobby, and Bobby agreed, and so we did that, and 13 months later, we were on the Opry. It took him 13 months, but we got on the Opry, and everything has been uphill since then. I mean, really.
Everything has been uphill since then?
Yeah, it took off. Our career just flat took off right there.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right, I see what you mean.
And he got us on Decca Records, and that was a change because we'd been on MGM, and they were using us as a tax write-off, I'm sure. And so we got with Decca Records and had numerous songs that were played on the radio, and that's where the problem was. We couldn't get anything played, but being as a member of the Opry and on Decca, we got our records played, and consequently, I mean, our career really took off right then and stayed on the upward swing for a long time. We had, of course, Rocky Top came along in 67, Christmas Day of 67, and we won the CMA Vocal Group of the Year in 71, I think it was, and we were nominated for that award for six straight years. We were in the top five for six straight years, and so our career really, really went up from the time we got on the Opry. It was a good day. That's been 51 years ago today.
My goodness. You know, and back then, getting to be a member of the Grand Ole Opry, appearing had a whole lot more oomph to it, I guess, than it does today. Yeah.
Today, the Opry is a shell of what it was back then. I call it the Grand Ole Amateur Hour now instead of the Grand Ole Opry. I mean, it is, because you don't know any of the people that's there. I know they have to make new people come along, you know, but in my opinion, they went about it wrong. Of course, that's why I'm here and they're there.
Oh, that's true.
Go ahead, son. I do too. I have some resentment for the way that the Opry management handled everything from the time that Hal Durham left as manager. From that point on, it has not been the same, but it's no big deal to be a member of the Opry. I mean, when we went there, people were lined up, I mean, for months just to get to be a guest on the Grand Ole Opry, just for that spot to be a guest on the Opry. And it's not like that anymore. You can sleep under the Woodland Street Bridge and the next day be on the Grand Ole Opry. I mean, it's just that simple. And the people here in Nashville, I don't know if they really know that or not, or realize that, but it's the truth. So, anyway.
Hey, let's talk about
retired,
the
I'm retired, I'm happy, and I'm, you know, I did what I could. I did what I was put here to do, and I did the best I could with it, and I'm done with it, and I'm quite happy.
Yes, I think you've put all those things in perspective really well. I mean, I'm saying that as someone that knows you fairly well, I think I get that you've dealt with all those issues. For people who don't know now, the Opry, not and being admitted didn't mean you just get to go on stage, but there was a deal, was it or not? We've talked about this before, that if you could make the show, you'd have to do your two songs, they'd have to pay you. It was kind of like a regular gig you could count on.
Well, it was when we signed, you had to be there 26 weeks a year, 26 Saturdays a year. And then they reduced that because the big stars are making the big money. That cost them a lot. And so they reduced that to 20, and then they started giving credits for Friday, and it kept on going until it doesn't exist anymore. When we went there, there was a $100,000 life insurance policy that went with membership of the Opry. From, is it the Hartford Insurance Company?
Well, that's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. That was it. And that doesn't exist anymore. And I know that's true because I know a couple of people that got it, so.
Wow.
It's not like it was, buddy. It's not like it was. A guitar player named Spider Wilson and Jimmy Capps and bass player Bob Moore, probably the best bass player that ever lived, Bob Moore and me were standing backstage of the Opry talking, and I think Ernest Tubb and his guys were on right at that time, and we were talking about that we were lucky enough to be there at the best time, and Spider said, the music is like magic, isn't it? And you know, that stuck with me, and it is. The music that when Carl Smith would go on, or Farron Young, or Acuff, Ernest Tubb, Ray Price, when those guys were going, all their band was dressed, and they all looked good. They looked like professionals, and it's not like that anymore.
You made a comment to me once, and you probably said it to other people too, but I remember you said that your whole, and what you're talking about with the way the performers looked, is that the people that were coming to see that were coming to a show to see something special.
And they put you, whether you wanted to be or not, they put you on a pedestal. And to me, it's like dressing to go to an office work. You know, they deserve to see you at your best, and they don't deserve to see you with holes in your Levi's and dirty clothes and all that stuff. They don't. I think they deserve more than that, but that's just my thinking. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Jackson would tell you a whole different story.
That's true.
It's just my opinion.
Well, I think I think people are either coming around or they're recognizing that's a big part of the show, is that they have to, I think that's a good term, is that they have to remember, in your terms, they're putting on a show. People are coming to see them put on a show. They aren't coming to go to somebody's house. They're going to a special event.
No. You look at the guys, in bluegrass music right now, they're really successful, and look at them on stage. Rhonda.
Right.
Herbie is one of them. Joe Mullins.
Absolutely.
Doyle Lawson. The Spinney brothers.
That's right.
The Gibson brothers. Look at those people that are really successful right now. They look the part when they go on.
They're right.
And when they go on the stage, people, they respect what is standing in front of them. And, I mean, that's just my way of thinking, so.
I think you're right. And they come out and they look great. Like you said, last time I talked to Eric Gibson, they just put out an album. It looked like a law firm on the front of it. They were dressed so good.
I know it. They just look so good. And I don't know them personally, but they're one of my favorite groups. And then I don't know the Spinney Brothers at all. I have no idea who they are, but I've seen a couple of promo of their albums, and they are dressed to the nines. I mean, they really look good.
That's a great band. They're from Canada.
Oh, okay. Well,
great.
And another, I saw a video, I guess it was day before yesterday, of Buck Owens. He had a television show, a syndicated TV show one time.
Yeah.
And if you want to, man, when that thing flashed on the screen, and all those guys were dressed alike. They looked good, and they played so good. And it's not like that anymore. It just isn't like that.
Yeah, except for the ones you mentioned, and you're right on that. And Rhonda puts on from the beginning to end, it's a show. It's not an accident. Joe Mullins has one of the best onstage shows, and the way Joe MCs the whole thing is just second to none.
It's second to none. That's exactly right. And all the successful guys that I mentioned there, they're some of the most successful in the whole business. Del McCurry's band,
that's
look
right.
at them. They all look good.
That's right.
They got suits and ties on. They look clean. They play good. They're professionals. And when you're a professional, to me, you've got to show respect for people putting you in that position.
Yeah.
And that's just my opinion, of course. $6 to buy your cup.
I was wondering where you were going to put the price at. It's not a dime anymore. It's not a quarter. It's $6. Oh man! Well, what a great day for the Opry and for the Osmond Brothers. If you guys, and you had told me this before, and I don't think people realize how serious you were that you were finished. You were decided this isn't working, even after those times you'd had all that success and the Grand Ole Opry membership was just the thing. And after that, well, it was Katie Bar the Door. It was all those great things and the great music. The great songwriters came to you then, and then Rocky Top, and then.
The songwriters, that was the really big thing. We had good songs, really great songs, and they still are great songs.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen to those records that we made in the 60s right now, and it still holds up.
That's great.
But Teddy Wilburn was a master at finding material, and he and that their whole organization, Bootloan Police Riot, and several other guys around town, writers, they realized that we were selling a few records, and so the writers, that's how they make a living.
Sure.
And so we got the best songs that we could have, and they were pretty good. Some of them were good songs.
Oh, yeah.
I heard somebody here in town played Beneath Still Waters. Our record of Beneath Still Waters last week, and boy, that's a good sound. It really is.
If you notice, Sonny, the bands that you've mentioned, the many of them, and there's others too that I think the successful band, I don't think it's an accident that they have all those qualities you mentioned, but the new releases come out, somehow they'll find an Osmond Brothers tune to sneak in there also.
Yeah, they will. And I'm lucky that I was in that position. And it lasted a long time, It lasted a long time. From 64, I stopped playing in 2005, I think. That's when I retired completely.
Right.
And I had a pretty good run.
I think when it's all said and done, which is a long way off yet, I think, is my personal opinion, which is worth that $6 cup of coffee, is that I think the Osmond Brothers will be remembered. will be remembered.
I wouldn't doubt what a Starbucks in New York City is 6 months.
I think you're right. So my opinion's worth that, but I think when it's all said and done, the Osmond Brothers are going to be that gold standard of bluegrass music for the time you stayed together, for the music you produced, and the high quality, all that. That's not because you're my friend. I just always felt that.
Well, we and just like I said before, we were put here to do what we did, and we did it the best we could, and we were quite lucky. I was lucky that we had Bobby, because he could not be duplicated.
Yeah, boy, that's true.
I mean, that was one thing that made us stand out from everybody else. Bobby could not be duplicated. Mm-hmm. His voice was like that, and never will be another since, or in the future, and there hasn't been one since then either.
No, there has not.
And that, when you have something that can't be duplicated, it will sell. It will sell. Uh-huh. And that, I think that was a great deal of our success right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was that. It was the way you guys stacked the harmonies. It was certainly your banjo playing and all those things too. But I've heard you say that before, that it's what's out front that counts as far as a lot of the audience is concerned.
Well, I think it was. I definitely think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I may be in an audience of one, but I'm still saying that's why we succeeded.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Anyway.
Well, listen, congratulations on being able to say it was 51 years ago. That's pretty cool. Yeah, man. I'm glad you're doing well. You sound really good. You sound like you're ready to do whatever.
Well, I'm enjoying this. I'll be 78 in October, and I don't feel it yet. I'll probably look at acting sometimes, but I don't feel it yet. Maybe that's coming later, huh?
Well, like you said, you didn't deserve. Go ahead. I like that. Say that about the arthritis thing. I can't get it.
I don't deserve to be where I'm at right now, but I have arthritis. I don't deserve to have that
right. That's the one. That's the one. All right. Well, I will. I appreciate you being available. I just kind of snuck up on you, and I thought, well, I'm just going to see what you're doing. And your name had come up, and I thought in case your ears were burning, I'd let you know why.
I appreciate you, Steve. A great deal.
All right, bud. I will. I'll catch up to you later, then. I'll let you go.
Take care.
Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Yeah, see you.
That's always fun. You just never know, folks. It's live radio. And that was the Chief, Sonny Osborne. That wasn't planned, so this goes to show if you don't listen to the program every Saturday, despite what I tell you about what's coming up, different things happen. I knew Rhonda was going to call. The thing with Sonny was certainly not even thought of at the time, but Rhonda and I talked about it for 30 seconds off the air, and I thought I'll just give him a text. So there you go, Sonny Osborne on Real Bluegrass. He's the most real. I've told people before, people want to try to guess why I named the show that. It's very simple, folks. If you talk to Sonny for more than 5 minutes as he makes a point that's important to him, he'll say, that's still blah, blah, blah. And that's unreal. That's where it comes from. I'm not trying to redefine music. I don't think this isn't bluegrass. The unreal part of the show comes from conversations I've had with Sonny over the years. That's his exclamation point. And I stole it from him, and he doesn't care.